from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a new New Orleans, and this is the new New Orleans, at least temporary home of Le Show. In the French Market, ladies and gentlemen, looking, that's a market. It's an old market. It's the world's oldest, I think it's the nation's oldest city market, for your listening pleasure. Looking, I have the ability right now to look out over the corner of Decatur. What is that, Ursuline?
Decatur, North Peters.
North Peters, yeah, right around there. You know where that is. And it's cold out there, ladies and gentlemen. If I hadn't been in Detroit a week ago, I'd say it's cold in New Orleans. But I was in Detroit a week ago. Not so much for the football, but for the free food. Because, as you know, after Sundance, it's hard to get back to paying for stuff. So, yeah, I went to where it was 9 degrees or something for the free roast beef. And the fondue station, really. You know, come for the roast beef, but stay for the fondue station. Anyway, this is New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. And this is a very special day. Because today, for the first time in 5 months plus, the crap in the street is beautiful. You walk down Royal Street in a couple of the neighborhoods in New Orleans, and instead of just the debris that's been vomited up by houses or been routed out by their owners, or the trees that died and have been collected and not picked up along the side of the street, what you walk among today is brightly colored beads, broken and lying in the street and run over by, you know, whatever traffic comes by, because it's carnival season. And last night was perhaps the most idiosyncratic of all the carnival parades here in New Orleans. It's called the Croix de Vue, or Croix de Vue, as some of them say. And there's a story in today's New Orleans newspaper, the Times-Picayune, which talks about the dining scene here as a conspiracy between patrons and diners to ignore for a few hours the profound distress outside. This parade was a conspiracy among the crowd and the participants not to ignore it, but to make wicked, profane fun of all the horrors that have gone on here in the last 5 months and of the dramatis personae involved. Not taking any sides, not taking any prisoners. It's such a profane parade, ladies and gentlemen. It's a bawdy parade in the best of times, which these are not. So I can't really describe to you a lot of what was going on or a lot of the names of things. But one of the floats, you may be aware by this time that one of the new pieces of street furniture in New Orleans, at least for a good long time after the thing, was refrigerators taped up and standing on the streets because they weren't any good anymore. So one of the floats last night was the fridge over troubled waters. But that's just, you know, that's just a little taste of what they were doing. There was a, you know, it goes over the line. But that's what you got to do in situations like this. Obviously, laughing at the people who, by today's Washington Post, we read that a committee controlled by Republicans in the House of Representatives is fixing to issue a massive report with more than 90 instances of mal or nonfeasance on the part of the federal government. We're not talking about the mayor or the governor. We're talking about your and my federal government in responding to Katrina. Now, you may have seen some of the hearings last week in which Brownie tried to unscapegoat himself with mixed results. But it's clear from the record, from the email record that was published in the New York Times on Friday, from these reports of the House committee, chaired, I repeat, by Republicans, that there were major failures at the federal end to respond to this disaster and major failures to admit that they knew what was going on at the time. Nobody could have ever predicted that they would have known. So, of course, they didn't. But they did. Anyway, as I was saying, to stand in the streets of this city and laugh wickedly and uproariously at these people and their doings, and this at the state and local level as well. It's not the big power. The big power resides elsewhere in booths and other locations. But it's the little power. And at least for a couple hours last night in the streets of a couple neighborhoods of New Orleans, the little power was on. Hello, welcome to the show.
Oh, babe, there's no substitute for love. Oh, babe, no substitute for love. 'Cause it's you, my babe, you that I'm thinking of.
I met this girl and she was lost in a cross street. She was walking off 14th on a sunny day. I asked her nicely if she needed some assistance. She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. So we started talking and we slipped around the corner, headed downtown for a cafeole. I got to thinking that she wanted something stronger. She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. Time away, loving a bubble. Time away, I'm in trouble. You got the money, honey, make mine a double. I love my love in a bubble. Down at McDougal, we were getting pretty hungry, so we ordered pizza and the waiter was gay. Yeah. Poured out the vino and he asked if we were married. She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. We sat for hours and we talked about the weather, about the government, the country, and the price that you pay. I said, hey, baby, do you want to hear some music? She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. Time away. With some groovy Hammond organ, I said, dance with me, baby, what do you say? She popped a bit, she boogled, and she did the mashed potato singing. Hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. 4 in the morning, we were getting pretty tired. She said, you know, I only live a block or two away. So I looked at her and I took her hand, we headed up on 7th, singing, hey, we're just trying to pass the time away.
Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too. I may not have a lot to give, but what I got I'll give to you. I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. Can buy me love. Everybody tells me so. Satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. Just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. Now buy me love. Love. Buy me love.
From the French Market in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's an old market. keep saying that for a while. Echoing Danny Barker, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, some news from outside the bubble for your listening pleasure. Just because we'd like to believe that it's just a few bad apples, but apparently the apple crop has been so big in the last few years. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, don't you know? Fresh evidence that British troops may have abused Iraqi prisoners is being investigated by military police this weekend. How'd they get that idea? Must have just made it up like all the rest of them did. Video footage. Now we're talking. Now we're talking added value. Of soldiers apparently headbutting detainees and kicking a blood-covered body lying on the ground is being studied by the Royal Military Police. It's understood that the incident is alleged to have occurred. Have they put enough weasel words in that sentence 2 years ago? Studying it. Do you think he kicked him in the right spot there? The film is believed to have been shot from a rooftop overhead. It is understood it's not possible to identify the location, the soldiers, or their regiment. The voices of people joking and laughing can be clearly heard. Sounds like the Coup de Voix parade. Defense sources say they're 95% sure the footage is genuine. Although they're wary, because in the past, fake pictures of alleged incidents have been distributed to embarrass British troops. If the allegations are proved, the incident may provoke further tensions among Muslims following the recent row over religious cartoons. Which, by the way, I'm going to show you again today. Here's this one. And, of course, this one. I don't know. I don't know why the other media don't do it, but here at Le Show, we do not. And there's this one. We do not let that stuff stand in our way. The alleged abuse shown in the video footage and reported in another newspaper in Britain today took place as the situation in Basra, which the British troops control, was beginning to deteriorate. British troops were clashing with former Iraqi soldiers protesting over the failure of the interim administration to pay them. Just a little detail that we like to overlook from time to time. Locals were also angry at shortage of water and electricity. Join the club, babe. And at the increasing rates of crime. Why, did New Orleanians evacuate to there, too? Notice how Houston is blaming their crime rate on New Orleans evacuees all of a sudden, even though it was going up, the crime was going up before evacuees arrived? Thanks very much. Particularly at night when gunmen prowled the, bet it says streets here on the next, yes, it does, apparently unhindered by the British troops and newly trained Iraqi police officers. The reputation of the British Army has been rocked by a series of investigations into abuse of Iraqi prisoners involving a number of different infantry regiments. The apples are spreading. You know, there's a veritable Johnny Bad Appleseed going on here. The Royal Military Special Investigation Branch has investigated 184 separate allegations against British troops in Iraq. Not all of them allegations of abuse or violence. In the home video, apparently filmed for fun by a corporal, an alleged 42 blows are rained down by the soldiers against rioting Iraqi teenagers in southern Iraq. A whistleblower felt obliged to give it a public airing to prevent future brutality. The footage is alleged to show soldiers dragging four youths, all apparently in their early teens, off the street and behind the high walls of a secluded army compound. Some of the Iraqis are then beaten with batons. That'll make them march in time. Punched and finally kicked between the legs. The recording apparently shows the soldiers ignoring the prisoner's plea for mercy. There is callous commentary from the cameraman, who is said to cackle with laughter and cry out at one point, quote, oh yes, you're going to get it, yes, naughty little boys, die, ha ha, unquote. It's the way apples talk. One prisoner is shown being hauled into the compound in a headlock, only to be headbutted and then punched in the kidneys. All right, so enough of that. The Ministry of Defense said we condemn all acts of abuse and brutality. But we don't condemn it really badly. We don't condemn it so it hurts. And also, outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, from the Asia Times, news of our ally, Pakistan. You know that this broadcast has been steadfast in pointing out that if you were looking around the world, or as Wolf Blitzer likes to say, around the world. Yes, Wolf, how else would you describe the circumnavigation of a globe? around the world. He seems always surprised that it's round when he says that. Around the world. Anyway, enough of that. If you looked around the world in 2003 and assessed who were really the scary, threatening countries, let's say the ones who had nuclear weapons already, who had attacked their neighbors, and who harbored terrorists and terrorist sympathizers high up in their government, objectively, you'd have to say a country that qualified on all three counts indubitably without screwing around with intelligence was Pakistan. So this now, from the Asia Times, Dateline Karachi. By taking control of virtually all of Pakistan's North Waziristan tribal area on the border with Afghanistan, the Taliban, remember them? Yeah, those cute folks, they're back, have gained a significant base from which to wage their resistance against U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan. At the same time, the development solidifies the anti-U.S. resistance groups in Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan, which will now fight under a single strategy. The Taliban recently declared the establishment of an Islamic State in North Waziristan, and they now, through the brutal elimination of the criminal elements who previously held sway, in effect rule the rugged territory. So it's the battle between the criminals and the Taliban. Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. As a tribal area, North Waziristan has always enjoyed significant independence from Islamabad, the Pakistani capital, and even on the occasions when the Pakistani army has ventured into the area to root out foreign fighters or Afghan resistance figures, it has received fierce opposition and has been forced to back off. The Taliban blow up a couple of Pakistan military forces every couple of days. This is aimed to keep the security forces away from the actual tribal areas of Waziristan. The writ of the Pakistani central government barely extends into the area. Everywhere else, the Taliban are calling the shots, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, it could be the criminals. It's the battle between the Taliban and the criminals, and the Taliban seem to have the edge. Now, ladies and gentlemen, on another subject, also one where this broadcast has been steadfast, some would say obsessed, the digital wonderland that awaits. This week, President Bush, you remember him? By the way, before we get to President Bush, an accountability moment. A CIA guy in yesterday's Saturday's New York Times, a veteran who oversaw intelligence assessments about the Middle East from 2000 to 2005, has accused the Bush administration of ignoring or distorting the pre-war evidence on a broad range of issues related to Iraq in its effort to justify the American invasion of 2002. President George H.W. Bush, the dad, came to his son's defense this week when the son was subjected to some sidelong swipes by Jimmy Carter and Joseph Lowery at the Coretta Scott King funeral. But strangely enough, Bush 41 did not come to the defense of his son in response to this allegation by a former high-ranking member of an agency which Bush 41 used to head, i.e. the CIA. Now, it's not called i.e. CIA, you know what I'm saying. A CIA spokeswoman said the agency had no comment. The agent, Paul Pillar, or Pillar, says, "What is most remarkable about pre-war U.S. intelligence on Iraq is not that it got things wrong and directly and thereby misled policymakers, is that it played so small a role, pre-war intelligence, in one of the most important U.S. policy decisions in decades." Anyway, back to the digital wonderland. President Bush, signed this week the law that will turn analog television screens black forever, much like my computer screen after the stewardess on United Airlines yesterday spilled some wine into the keyboard. May I suggest, by the way, in the future, that stewardesses take the glass from the patron, pour the from the bottle into the glass at their cart and then hand the glass to the patron, as opposed to trying to handle an unwieldy bottle, kind of slimy, kind of, well, at least dewy, in the limited space of modern airliners. Might I suggest that as a way to prevent happening to other people what happened to yours truly? Anyway, President Bush signed the law that will make analog television screens go blank in 2009. The deadline was originally, what, last year? That didn't work out. Because we're also supposed to switch to digital television. Here from the Christian Science Monitor. Yeah, there still is a Christian Science Monitor. Isn't that wild? Here is a good gathering of some of the reasons why many of us haven't switched yet and why those of us who have don't know what we're looking at. Some technology toys such as iPods and digital cameras have swept into American households with breathtaking speed. But despite a yearly spike in interest around the Super Bowl, high-definition televisions just haven't had the same impact. Only 15% of American families have bought a digital television capable of HD reception since their introduction. And only 15% more are seriously considering buying one in the near future. What's holding back the other 70%? Prices. So are hidden hassles, for example, getting an HD TV set to actually display a high-definition picture involves a process that a surprisingly large number of people either don't know about or don't bother with. And for many, the value of a fantastic picture that's available on just a few special channels has now outweighed the cost and frustrations. HDTV's picture quality just isn't revolutionary enough to sell to a large number of people right now, says Todd Board. Yes, a talking board, who tracks technology trends at Ipsos Insight. Sorry. And switching is a big commitment. He says you can't easily bring it home and try it for a month. HDTV is a lot less simple than TVs of yore. HD signals can be received over the airwaves. In the future, nearly everyone will watch it using a cable or satellite hookup. That means having a special HDTV compatible converter box and signing up for special service. The broadcast and HDTV logo in the corner of the screen doesn't mean anything for most people unless they've signed up for that service. Unlike iPods, HDTV isn't getting favorable word of mouth because, quote, it's not simple, says Philip Swan. Has a website that covers TV technology. Television is supposed to be simple. Sure, look at the programming. He says, doesn't say the part about the programming. So the complication of HDTV seems more dramatic. Here's the most bizarre HDTV statistic. More than half of current HDTV owners aren't really watching shows in high def because they haven't taken the steps to do so. About 40% of HDTV owners know they aren't watching high def, says the Leichtman Research Group in Durham, North New Hampshire, whose company polled them. About 17% believe they're watching HDTV, but aren't. Some owners have convinced themselves that if they bought a set capable of receiving HDTV, that must be what they're seeing. Some 80% of HDTV buyers are men who may be reluctant to admit they made a mistake. It's kind of male mentality, Mr. Leichtman says, of, I bought it, I love it. And there are a lot of people, adds Swan, who just don't care. They use their HDTVs to watch DVDs. Manufacturers and retailers have little incentive to make sure that HDTVs are properly installed. It's the job of satellite and cable TV to get those boxes out there into those homes. To receive the new digital signal, consumers will either need to buy a new digital TV or buy a converter for their analog set. Federal subsidies will be available. The analog signal is going away. It's the difference, ladies and gentlemen, between a technology which is mandated by the federal government and one whose adoption is pressed forward by the fact that consumers actually like it and see other people with it and want it for themselves. And you have to ask yourself, well, if federal mandates are such a good way to bring about a change to new technology, Why are we still driving cars fueled with gasoline? And now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I'm going to read the trades for you. Yes, I am. First, from Advertising Age, it's a Socratic debate about branded entertainment. Yes, got to read that. Dateline Beverly Hills, it's time to get back to basics in what's become a stampede into branded entertainment. Some of the players have failed to ask a fundamental question, namely, who they are as a brand. Harvard Law School professor Arthur Miller gathered executives from Hollywood's creative community, along with marketers, consultants, and other branded entertainment players for a Socratic debate at the Beverly Hills Hotel. It's where Socrates used to have them, actually. Near the pool. Marketers who've overlooked that crucial first step have wasted time, energy, and money, and made some misguided marriages that damaged their brand. Hollywood's but not without fault either, panelists said. Sometimes sacrificing the integrity of the story for the sake of the deal. In Hollywood? Are you kidding me? Says Stephen Burkov, director of marketing for Audi. You must be very clear about what you stand for and why you deserve a place in the market. You start with knowing your brand DNA. Unquote. That's so if your brand is ever convicted of a felony, you can try to get off by calling Barry Scheck. The consumer is king, and advertisers need to study their audiences to better understand how to connect with them emotionally. Traditional media doesn't cut it. Branded entertainment can be a means to that end. Marketers have to choose carefully, though, or risk becoming part of the din, says Peter Dang, chief marketing officer of Bragman Nyman Caffarelli. Well, that's good branding. I'm with Bragman Nyman Caffarelli. Marketers need to ask if it helps create an emotional connection with the consumer. Does it give you the kind of lifestyle projection you want to reflect with your brand? ? End quote. I got your lifestyle projection right here, Mr. Dang. And Dateline Seattle, just a brief report from Starbucks annual meeting, announcing efforts to expand into the music business and launching a digital download network. Starbucks chairman Howard Schultz told reporters, quote, "We're in the experience business," unquote. So am I. The radio show is just part of it, ladies and gentlemen. The Le Show experience is going to... Well, there won't be mugs. No. But the... No, there won't be tote bags either. All right, anyway, from Variety. Swift boat pros in demand in D.C. If you can construct believable stories with enough truth in them to smear somebody royally, there is a pot of gold waiting for you in D.C. The story goes into the history, a little bit of the Swift boat attack on John Kerry. Then says Democrats and liberals have tried similar PR offenses, most recently against Supreme Court nominees, but with far less success. Why, asks the story? Because blue state spinmeisters haven't yet mastered what their red state counterparts have. Quote, "Modern communication isn't about truth. It's about a resonant narrative," unquote. Eric Diesenhall, a former Reagan administration aide, now president of his own crisis management firm. quote, "The myth of PR is that you will educate and inform people." No. The public wants to be told in a story who to like and who to hate. If the Swift boat attack seemed audacious, it's because, as Diesenhall says, quote, "We're living in an age of audacity." George Bush communicates in terms of audacity, he continues. Democrats communicate in terms of complexity. Unquote. It's the age of audacity. That makes a lot more sense than calling this the information age, when people don't know crap. That's just a conclusion I draw, ladies and gentlemen, upon having read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Won't you?
Cupid's arrow missed its mark, and I sighed with relief. Don't need love to make my life complete. But how could I know when you walked in? Well, at most I thought that we'd be friends. But your eyes were distracting, and while I couldn't see, love happened to me. Been in love and lost in love, a tragic denouement. No thanks, not for me, I've got to run. But I ran right into you. Faced with love like this, what could I do? Your smile was so breathtaking, and while I couldn't speak, love happened to me. But I ran right into you. Faced with love like this, what could I do? Your smile was so breathtaking, and while I couldn't speak, love happened to me.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, don't look now, but the entire Northern Hemisphere is experiencing a sustained period of warming that is unprecedented in the past millennium. It's just a millennium. What are you worrying about? It's 1,000 years. This, according to the British newspaper The Independent, a review of a range of temperature records from tree rings and ice cores to historical documents has found that at no time since the 9th century have temperatures been so consistently high. Study is published in the journal Science and found that the late 20th century was the warmest period for the Northern Hemisphere since at least 800 AD. That was a swing in time. That was very groovy. Eclipsing the well-known medieval warm period when vines were cultivated successfully in Northern Europe and the Vikings exploited the ice-free seas to colonize Greenland. So, okay, maybe we'll colonize Greenland again. It still needs colonization, apparently. Climate scientists from the University of East Anglia analyzed 14 sets of temperature records from America, Europe, and East Asia. So, I'm cold, but it's warm. Okay? That's the headline there. And now, another copyrighted feature, the apologies of the week, preceded by the long pause.
We're so sorry.
For your listening pleasure. Oh, there's so many. The editor of a Christian newspaper in Norway, the second to publish the controversial drawings. These, right here. These drawings. Apologized this week. Magazinet editor Vebjørn Selbelk said he failed to foresee the pain and anger the drawings would cause. Also, please don't kill me. No, he didn't say that. Respect MP, British Respect Member of Parliament George Galloway, last seen pretending to be a cat in the British episode of Celebrity Big Brother, now says he's received an apology from the Egyptian government. See, the Muslims demand apologies, but they also give them. That's fair. From the Egyptian president, after being detained at Cairo airport for over 12 hours. He went to the Middle East Friday after being invited to join a protest against the Iraq war. He said he was detained without food and water and only set free on Saturday after the event ended. On Sunday, Galloway said President Hosni Mubarak had apologized on behalf of the Egyptian people. It was a most gracious apology, which I accept wholeheartedly. I consider the matter now closed, he said. He's going to go back to lapping milk out of Ruta Lee's hands. Just kidding about that. The Independent Newspapers Group of South Africa has offered to publish an apology for any offense a weekend article caused to Muslims. The decision to apologize was an acknowledgement of an error in judgment, said Chris Whitfield, editor of the Cape Times. The article, an opinion piece, provided historical details about the prophet's life. It mentioned how he was depicted in medieval Christendom in an unflattering way. Apparently, tick people off. The Syrian Foreign Ministry issued a statement this week that expressed regret for the violent demonstrations in Damascus over caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. This is an apology festival. That's what's going on here. Norwegian Ambassador to Syria Sven Sevje said in response that Syria has acknowledged its responsibility under the Vienna Conventions to ensure the security of foreign representation. He added, quote, "These bridges were not burnt by us. I think there's a basis to return to normal relations, whatever this means," unquote. Well, you should know, sir, you're saying it. But other religions are involved in apologies too, ladies and gentlemen. Chicago Francis Cardinal George this week offered an apology with a plea to the 850 priests in the Chicago Archdiocese. The apology was for his handling of the case of Reverend Daniel McCormick, who was indicted on Friday on sexual abuse charges, accused of sexually abusing three young boys in the rectory, the most painful place to be abused, by the way. "Our response was sorely inadequate," Cardinal George said. "I apologize to each of you," apologizing to the priests, that is, "for not finding some way to at least provisionally remove McCormick." He had been under fire for allowing McCormick to remain in ministry after he was first picked up and investigated by police last summer on the allegations. Cardinal also wrote, quote, "I feel like I'm walking on quicksand here. There is so much that I remain unaware of, yet I am, in the end, responsible for all," unquote. Who does that remind you of? Authorities who are responsible but uninformed. 200 years after Anglican reformers helped to abolish the slave trade, the Church of England has apologized for profiting from it. The General Synod acknowledged complicity in the trade after hearing the church had run a slave plantation, sorry, Hillary, in the West Indies, and that individual bishops had owned hundreds of slaves. It voted unanimously to apologize to the descendants of the slaves after an emotional debate in which the Archbishop of Canterbury urged the church to share, quote, "the shame and sinfulness of our predecessors." Also in England, widow Elizabeth McPhee, 78 years old, has received an apology from police after they issued a warrant for her son, who died 4 years ago. Police apologized and said it had happened due to, quote, "an exceptional set of circumstances." Yes, people don't die every day. Faced with growing public backlash against his company after a string of scandals, the chairman of Samsung, South Korea's largest and most profitable conglomerate, apologized this week and offered to make a sizable donation to, quote, society. Society. In a statement to the people read by an aide, Samsung's chairman, Lee Kun-hee, offered to make a donation of 800 billion won, or approximately $800 million. Lee said the nation should decide where the money should go. Samsung will keep its annual program to build orphanages and libraries and to help the homeless. Hey, Samsung, I got an idea. I know where you can come. Lee, South Korea's richest man, also said the group would withdraw its legal challenges to new fair trade regulations that seek to reduce family control of the giant conglomerates. State prosecutors are investigating allegations that Lee's family had used illegal means to transfer control of the group to his son. Sorry about that. University of California President Robert Dines testifying before a state Senate panel investigating reported extravagance and secrecy in the university's executive pay practices apologized this week for what he described as his own and the university's shortcomings on the issue and promised change. I take responsibility for the fact that the university has not always met its obligations to public accountability in disclosing executive compensation, he told lawmakers, and I believe I owe you and the state of California an apology for those shortcomings, he said. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A couple more. Leighton Hewitt, Australian tennis player, says accusations that he snubbed a Special Olympic fundraising event feel like a knife in the back. He didn't know about the event and couldn't have gone anyway because he was due to be playing in the Davis Cup in Switzerland, and he was sidelined by an injury. So he couldn't do that either. Special Olympics Australia has unreservedly apologized to the champ for a misunderstanding that fueled those reports in newspapers and on television. Now, the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And Michael Jackson is coming to terms with the possibility that the joyride in the Middle East may be over. According to FoxNews.com, Jackson has been cut off and kicked out by Prince Abdullah, son of the King of Bahrain. That's one of the Gulf Emirates. Thank you. He's no longer, the prince, no longer supplying funds to support Jackson's lifestyle, his kids, and a nanny in an extended stay in Bahrain. Jackson traveled last week from Bahrain to Germany and then on to Italy on commercial flights and business class, no private plane. Jackson had earlier said he was thinking of taking up residence in Germany, but he's not in Berliner yet. The prince was informed by his family, the Al Khalifa clan, that's my favorite Bahraini clan, by the way, just in case you were wondering, that Jackson is no longer welcome to unlimited generosity from the Bahraini royals. Jackson is aware of this. Sources tell FoxNews.com that Jackson has found a couple of wealthy families in Dubai who helped him out, but their largesse is limited. Say sources, Jackson is essentially bouncing around the United Arab Emirates looking for handouts.
Singing in Bahrain.
Oh, let's start that again.
Singing in Bahrain. Dancing in Dubai. But the princes had their meeting and they waved me goodbye. So now I'm flying commercial, a king of his throne, a dog in the manger in search of a bone, always helps the children, but where are they now? Now that I need them to help me somehow, I'm looking for a sugar daddy, I'm looking for a sugar plum, someone doesn't think I'm a baddie. Bum, 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 bum.
Get me to Germany, sinking in debt. I'm sure I had money, that's the part I don't get. Do I blame the Germans? Do I blame the Jews? It's Tommy Mottola, the sorcerer.
Look, look at what you've done. You've hit and run my heart, and I just can't seem to think of saving myself, and I still don't understand why you'd be the man for me. But I can't seem to think of loving someone else, and it's so mysterious. Well, let's hear it, hear it for love. 'Cause I could be home in my bed and you'd be chasing airplanes. I could pretend to be dead and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like a hole in my head, but the world will never be the same without you. Will never ever be the same. So look, look at what you've done. I'm overwhelmed and overcome, and I can't seem to make you give me any more of yourself. And look at what you did. You lit the sky, then you closed the lid, and now I'm like dog who's crawling on your floor. And it's a mysterious world. Let's hear it for love. 'Cause I could be home in my bed and you'd be chasing airplanes. I could pretend to be dead and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like a furious, the places where you find love. There's no planet, it's a man and a woman, it's heaven and it's human, and there's nothing better going. It's the taste of danger, sex with a stranger. It's the last man on earth, it's a dog in a manger. So let's hear it, let's hear it.
See, what ticks me off is it really was red wine that should have gone with that computer. And she poured white. I don't. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, around the world via your computer, if you have a computer that hasn't had wine poured into it, at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow, on channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free podcast. I think you still need a computer for that. I'm shut out at kcrw.com, and it would be just like the friendly skies being slightly less bibulous if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lumail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh guests. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. A fond and sad farewell to our longtime New Orleans associate on this broadcast, Bob Dunn. And thanks to Damon Jacobs of WWOZ-FM New Orleans, the greatest radio station on the planet, for helping to make today's show possible. No, your station's good, too. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, the elbow in the ribs. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Now I got to go out and I'm going to find Anderson Cooper this trip, I swear. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home. Are you listening to me, Mr. Samsung? Of the homeless.